listen, think, learn, grow. Listen, think, learn, grow. Live, live, live.
This is Metaphysical Universe, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Douglas Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening and welcome to the Spirit of Life program for Wednesday, February 12th. My name is Michael Kelly and I am here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening, everybody. Glad to be here.
Welcome to those joining us live as well as to those listening to the archives. Spirit of Life is a weekly service and educational program of the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit as well as to explore science and spirituality. In addition to this broadcast, ICMH offers other educational programs that can be found at metaphysicsinstitute.org and tfuniversity.org. Now, as always, we're going to begin tonight with our 9 abbreviated principles of belief. Those are 1. Do no harm, do right. 2. We believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit. The answers we seek already exist within us. 3. We believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems. 4. We are all equal. One planet, one race, one ancestry, and one destiny. 5. We recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. 6. We are physical and spiritual beings. Consciousness survives death of the physical body. 7. Self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will create self-completeness. 8. Metaphysical education and practical life skills empower the human spirit and enhance the human condition. And 9. Expanding human consciousness leads to human evolution and peaceful coexistence. Now, tonight's topic, a discussion of the unknown. I don't know what we're going to talk about.
It's such an interesting subject when you think about it, as we're thinking about it. The unknowable, because, you know, we've talked in the past, Michael, about how some things we're just never going to know. You know, we're very curious. Human beings are very curious. We have existential questions. We have spiritual questions. We have, you know, questions on quantum physics. But it's just theory. It's what we think it is. And it's not necessarily true. It's really from, in our little place in the universe, it's really quite unknowable. And I know I've had to make peace in my life with some things are just going to be a mystery and I'm never going to know the answer. It's just unknowable.
Well, I've had to struggle with that a bit myself. And it is a bit of a existential crisis when you ultimately come to a point when you realize that you'll just never know. And, you know, the way that I learned how to deal with it is just utter denial and belief in things I can't possibly prove.
Well, it's subjective, isn't it? Because each of us has a different perspective. And I know one of my late teachers would say that there could be a coffee mug on the table, but I see it from the point of view that the handle is on the right side. You see it that it's on the left side. But if you turn it a certain way, you don't see the handle at all. So is it a mug? Well, we kind of agree it's a mug, you know, in our collective consciousness. But really, it's a vessel that could hold anything. You can put a plant in there. Who decided it's going to be a mug or a coffee cup? And I know it sounds really, you think, wow, that's really tedious thinking. But it's so many different perceptions of one thing that we agree on. But is that, you know, when it comes to philosophy or why are we here or, you know, what's in the universe? Do you believe in God? Do you not believe in a superpower? Do you believe in fairies and elves? Well, it'll be your perception of reality. But we don't know. Like, it's not a fact. You know, Frank would say that the only fact we know is that we're on a planet and we can look up at the sky and see a moon and a few stars and the sun and the day. Those are the only facts we have. Everything else is an opinion and conjecture. And so, I mean, it's like, well, that's a futile conversation, but it's being okay with the fact that we are not going to know. It's entertaining and it's fun and we're curious, and I'll get those comments in the chat already, but we are curious. Colleen says the unknowns draw us in. Absolutely. You know, so we are interested. And I think that the biggest thing that those outside curiosities can do is, if we look inward, ask ourselves who I am, be interested in the self. Yeah. And even then, I won't know what that is, but I know. So that's like an intuitive feeling. I know I'm here. I know I have a consciousness. I know how my brain thinks. But I'm always saying, like, why did I do that? You know? And look, you know, I was multitasking the other day, and the darndest thing, I put the cheese in the freezer. It was soy cheese, but, you know. And I'm saying, okay, now where's my soy cheese? And I backtracked and I went, oh, I didn't do that, did I? So why did I do that at that moment? I don't know.
Well, if you had actually frozen the cheese and then tried it later, you might have stumbled across a product or a way of eating cheese that nobody ever thought of before. It revolutionized everything.
You don't know. See?
Which kind of just stumbles me into a thought a lot about how things that are unknowable become knowable. A lot of it's random chance.
Ah, see? Well, now we go into another part of, we can speculate, have a curiosity, and again, conjecture in some way, because I suspect it's this way. You know, it's like 40 years ago, wondering about quantum physics, but science couldn't prove it, but now it can in a lot of ways, right? Mm-hmm. There's certain verifiable, repeatable events that satisfy our curiosity that something is truthful, even though we don't really know, you know, in another mm-hmm. way. But it's that evolution of learning and growing, but that's our curiosity that makes us do that. And dumb things like putting cheese in the freezer.
Well, it happens to the best of us.
But Wendy said she tried to pour coffee in the wine glass the other day. Glad she realized it before she actually poured. That's a good one, Wendy. Look, we've all done those kinds of things. So, like, that's an absence of the moment, right? And, yeah, we have those. We all have them. But not to be kind of confused with slight dementia. I don't think I'm there yet. But that unknowable, you know, that unknown becoming known, and where you were going with that, Michael, because that's a really good point.
Yeah. You can point to a lot of the biggest discoveries in, you know, known science that point to just people that stumbled across to discover, you know, radar, microwaves, x-rays, all those kind of things. Mm. But, you know, as I was listening to the discussion, I was thinking of a phrase I heard somewhere along the lines of, there are the laws of physics, after that everything is opinion. And I would say, I would submit to you that if you want to go really deep dive into the philosophical nature of things, there's the saying that, you know, I think, therefore I am. So, I think, therefore I know I am, and that's it.
Yeah, I know. Descartes said that, I think. That was a Descartes thing.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
And, sorry, go ahead.
And I was just going to say, but you know, anything, ultimately we have to be aware of the fact that anything is possible, that our perception is limited, and, you know, ultimately the more we learn about ourselves, how the human mind works, how the brain itself mechanically works, we learn that ultimately if you had the right technology or the right set of circumstances, it wouldn't be that hard to trick your perceptions. But that being said, that's just, you know, pure speculation, because anything is possible until you have facts to prove something. it's all wild speculation otherwise, but it's interesting speculation. It's fun.
Well, I have to insert this because there's a conversation in the chat. So people listening in the archives, I would hope that one day you could join us in this chat room because sometimes it's very entertaining in the live chat. Dr. Edward was saying that last week he went for a bike ride and had put a sneaker on one foot and a sandal on the other. And, you know, we all have those moments, right, where we're kind of like our brain is just kind of overwhelmed and we're, I think, a collision of things. And later we look and say, boy, that was dumb, you know. But, and again, we're overwhelmed with information. So kind of where I'd like to take this now, too, is that we have way more information than we did before. But we have to discern that information because there's so many opinions. And again, back to the coffee cup, right? Everybody's got an opinion and a thought, an idea, but we have to discern it, kind of linking more constructive, concrete points together and see if that makes sense from every point of the circle, so to speak.
Right.
So that we don't go off on tangents and become overwhelmed in our lives and you know, kind of say, ooh, maybe that's not quite right, you know. And so we have to discern a lot of information. I think in one perspective, we know a lot more than we did 20, 50 years ago. But I think we're honestly just on the precipice of knowing so much more, like really so much more. But are we able to, if our perception right now is kind of stuck, are we able to perceive what's coming? Does that make sense? It's like, so it then becomes unknowable if you're stuck in this way of thinking, right? So if I'm stuck here in a belief system, whatever's in front of me is knowable to some, but not knowable to me. And even when it comes to science in very many ways has been stuck on a certain perception, like of how evolution, for instance. And then we start realizing, oh, some other scientist says, yeah, but I can prove to you with this other information because I've got more DNA testing. And so we're always having to check in, but not to get stuck, or it will always be unknowable.
Well, that's exactly the truth in the sense that there's a balance between those things that are ultimately always going to be unknowable for a human being because we have certain limitations. We live in an infinite universe where we are, but, you know, what a small part of it. And, of course, that can feel daunting, but as others have said, we should take pride in the fact that we are a species that has achieved so much that we can even comprehend the infinite nature of existence in the universe. And I would say that knowledge, which, you know, ultimately science is simply a search for the objective truth, and people need to realize that that doesn't mean that things we haven't yet discovered don't exist. It means that we can prove this set of things. And there's a whole lot that we don't know. So when it comes to knowledge, it is a constantly shifting, evolving, moving, breathing thing. There is no such thing as static. We live in an analog, organic world of constantly shifting ideas, new facts, new knowledge being discovered. And often, you know, what can appear to be mysticism might become science down the road.
Yeah, bingo. You know, Stephen was saying, yes, we're considering what's subjective versus objective approach to knowledge and awareness. Very good point. And then Dr. Colleen is mentioning that there's such a difference between knowing and understanding. And I'd like to touch on that one because as somebody who's intuitive, I can know something, but I don't necessarily understand it. And it's subjective, but trying to be as objective as my subjectivity will allow, trying to understand what happens, what is that intuitive self, what's the instinctive self, you know, so trying to peel those layers away. And eventually one day, you know, not too long ago, I just said, you know what? I don't know if I'm going to understand this ever. And maybe I'm just making myself bonkers trying to figure it out. It and just to let go, because the more I analyze it, the more it slips away, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. But there's a knowing, just some things I just know, and I have to kind of reconcile that with what I believe and then what I understand, because mm-hmm. my understanding might always be minimal. And, you know, my late teacher Magda, before she passed, said, I've learned all I can in this lifetime. It's my time to leave, but I've given you questions that will lead you to more questions, and you'll carry on my work. And I think that was the most invaluable thing, many invaluable things, but what she left me with is to always be curious and ask the questions, and one question to another. That does lend to some understanding, but I qualify everything I say to that it's a theory. And I might know more next week and tell you something completely different.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm building that understanding. Now, what I knew, here's an example. Quite a number of years ago, I might have said part of this story on another program, but about 30 years ago, I had a talk with a biophysicist, and I said, I'm curious about how we might be changing our DNA, you know, through blood transfusions. You know, if we can share disease and we're sharing things at a cellular level, it could be the DNA as well. And she said, well, it's a good theory. We don't have the science to prove that yet, but we have been addressing that possibility. Now, it was only a few weeks ago that I read an article of 10 years of research on somebody who'd had an organ transplant whose DNA had changed, and they had the evidence, and they were studying other subjects who had had organ transplants. So here's a concept, just something that, to me, just randomly popped into my head. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying blood transfusions are wrong. Mm-hmm. I think that...
Well...
You know,
as organisms, we're constantly sharing DNA, and, you know, it's beneficial to deepen the gene pool, to share DNA, to spread things. It adds to, it doesn't really detract from, in a lot of ways.
Well, but we could also be creating anomalies, because there's the two sides of all parts, right? And
well, life is anomalies.
I mean,
I was just going to say, you know, going back to... Evolution, the theory of evolution is a fascinating, fascinating subject in so many ways, because it is a constantly evolving concept. And kind of an interesting thing, I just happened to be listening to something on this earlier, so I'll just throw it out there. In the terms that we're talking, we would call in the normal vernacular a theory. Scientifically speaking, that would be a hypothesis. And a theory is something like, you know, the theory of relativity, the theory of evolution, very likely things. We're pretty close, but we can't, you know, we don't know everything, but we're pretty sure it's in this ballpark, and we have a lot of things to back that up. But let's talk about evolution for a moment. We know, obviously, we can see evolution as a process of repetitive adaptation. And I understand that, you know, beliefs come into things in a big way for a lot of people, but this is my personal, you know, belief, if you will, my faith in the science of it, or in the idea of it, that it has a lot of unknowns, by the way. There's a lot about how we came to be that is truly unknown and unknowable at this moment. I hope that it won't always be. But it's interesting. You can look at how life has evolved and adapted and evolved and adapted. One question I've always had is, what's driving that? Why does life want to be alive in the first place? What is it that's driving that desire to live and spread and exist?
Go there, Michael. See, that's unknowable.
Those are the funnest questions to ask.
Yeah.
But, and I'll also say this, you know, it's not just random chance. A big thing that has been coming about you know, evolution hypotheses is behavior having a much bigger impact in evolution than we thought. Dogs would be a perfect example, in the sense that 10,000 years ago, what you see as a dog was just a gray wolf, and that animal has no additional DNA really has been added, but through behavior, through, you know, essentially selective breeding eugenics, we created the first species created by humanity, a dog. And a famous experiment done in Russia with the, I believe, Russian gray fox. They domesticated some. They would look at, 100. They would pick the 10 that were the friendliness. They would have them mate with each other another generation after generation. They would do this. What you have is essentially almost a domesticated animal. But what was fascinating is within a relatively short amount of time, not only did their behavior change, their physical characteristics changed. Their snout shortened, their forehead got bigger. Behavior changed the physical development of that species. The choices that were made, I mean, obviously this was a controlled environment, but the choices that we make in life actively develop the course of our species, of our people, of life. The choices we make do have a physical, literal impact. We've now seen this, that evolution, I mean, we pass literal information from one generation to the next in DNA. It's instinct. It's that thing that you feel without really being able to verbally speak of, you know?
Dr. Edward just brought up in the chat, too, about Bruce Lipton writing the book The Biology of Belief, and how his theory, too, is that it alters DNA, you know, dominant thoughts and the environment. So that's exactly what you're alluding to, Michael.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Great points. The chat's been fantastic tonight. It's actually hard to keep up a little bit, but great points made by a lot of people. You know, Dr. Edward, Dr. Colleen. I know I've seen some other great stories in there, but that's what's so fun about the unknowable. There is no better conversation to have about things you can't possibly know, because it allows you to expand your mind. It allows you to exercise your critical thinking, but at the same time, you know, have these fun thought experiments to expand what you perceive and to really expand your creativity. It helps expand what you can conceive of as being possible.
Well, even when, if I can speak about intuition for a moment.
Absolutely.
And what I can see, like as an intuitive, things might come to me by a smell or a picture or little clips like a photograph or a movie. And it's up to me then to be able to translate how that plays out in general life. But a lot of things are outside my frame of reference. So I have to speak in a way that's, it's like this, but not, and it's different, and I don't quite understand, right? So it's, but even then, it's still on a particular frequency of how we're operating. The moment we know it, that frequency is altered. So there's a choice in there, a conscious choice. So if I say, oh, I see this coming for you, it's up to them. They can decide whether they want to do that or not. You know, don't go down that alley or don't cross the street and look at all those other variables that are there. And I got to add that there's way more variables than there were when I began as a girl. And I know I've tried to describe this to you before, Michael, about how there, when I was a girl, there were no cell phones. Honestly, when I was a girl, we had the party lines and the telephone. But the air was clearer and readings were easier. I mean, I could see way down the, it was just like a clear movie. And it's not that people didn't have choices. It's just the air was less polluted by frequencies to be able to see. As, you know, the last few decades has come, not only are people more distracted with more types of thinking, entertainment, you know, et cetera, et cetera, and busy lives, we also have, think of it, just imagine all these wavelengths in the air and grid lines of energy of, you know, one cell phone to another, pinging off of towers and electromagnetic frequencies and, you know, all this thing that has kind of created a density in the air. So I've had to adjust my frequencies and how I perceive it. And that's where numbers came in for me, which is kind of bonkers because I'm not good at math. But if I do some numerology and I tune in numerically, almost like a computer program, oddly enough, then I can zero in. It's like I'm plugging my phone into your phone, and I've had to learn to do it differently and adapt. Nonetheless, I see way more variables now than, a good number of years ago. But again, life has changed that way. So now I'm seeing, I could sit down with somebody, I'm saying, geez, I see like three pathways here. And, you know, it's whichever way you want to go. It's like soulmates could meet, but there's a lot of distractions, and it doesn't mean those soulmates, if you will call them that, would necessarily be able to partner in this lifetime. Can they make that work? Maybe somebody's an alcoholic or gets, you know, kind of seduced away by drugs or, you know, all the other things that can distract us from our spiritual sense of knowing to better understand how we're to live our life. And we're missing those really integral ingredients. But again, what is our true path? Because you're born into a certain time with a certain environment, and then we choose how to continue to create that. So we don't just learn. We're learning about what's going on, but what do we want to create in the midst of that? So it's, you know, you had used a word before, Michael, but there's kind of like this chaos, but there is order.
Oh, yes, the infinite mix of chaos and order.
So I can know something. I can, when I'm sitting with somebody, I can know it. I don't necessarily understand exactly how that's going to manifest because it's their life. But I'm not sure then also what they're going to do with that, you know, because so I have to always have this fresh, clear mind that somebody's life can change in a day. And so we have that kind of ability. And for some people, it's really profound. And other people, it's just small, little, tiny brushstrokes of decisions that begin to change the frequency on the whole, you know, in an evolution of sorts. So, again, that can change. But again, the difference between knowing versus understanding versus we have the power to recreate.
Absolutely.
So it's fascinating.
And when discussing the unknowable, considering how many things are truly unknowable, you could go on for, I guess, an unknowable amount of time in discussing them. But, you know, I think that really it's accepting what, you know, coming to peace with the fact that there are things we're not going to be able to know and being able to have the ability to say, I just don't know, I'm not going to know. That's a question I can't answer. But also having the, you know, kind of balance and intuition to know when to push the envelope. Because certain things that are unknowable can become knowable. Yeah. Hence one of the cards. Which, speaking of which, you know, we're going to keep chatting probably for another minute. But throw your names in the chat. We're going to be pulling cards. I think we're going to be doing the Inner Oracle and Tarot tonight, Dr. Hunter.
Oh, sure. I'm happy to do that.
All right. It's definitely, I think, becoming a little bit of a fun tradition. And, you know, I would say that it's frustrating how many things are unknowable in this world. But at the same time, does it not make life interesting, to say the least? I mean, if at times terrifying, isn't it at least interesting?
It's always interesting.
Yes, it is.
You know, it always gives us something to do.
You know? Yeah.
Sometimes I think all this analytic, you know, analyzing and being analytical is like entertaining my mind. But I like to be in a position of that inner quiet where I can hear thoughts that I know are not mine, and understand that there are frequencies of energy flying around all the time. And it's like a thought comes in my head and like, I know I'm not capable of that kind of a thought. I know myself that well. So, oh, where that thought came from somewhere. All I have to do is listen. And so I think when I took that position of being a better listener of whatever's going on around other people, their energy and the world and life, it opened new doors for me anyway. But of course, the caution is I can entertain myself to no end. And it's not that I'm eavesdropping on other people's consciousness. I'm just eavesdropping on the cosmic, as I say.
Sometimes you can't just, you know, help but overhear a bit of cosmic truth. What can you say?
This is true. Well, shall we get to, I see a number of names in here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's see what we've got. I'm
just
trying to
look
write
through.
Down.
I think Dr. Carlene is first, if I'm not mistaken.
That's what I have too. Yes, right. Absolutely. So let's get on with the show here. What have you got for Dr. Carlene?
All Michael? Right. I have number 42, trust and integrity.
Hmm.
Integrity means being true to oneself intuitively and sensibly. It is adherence to moral and ethical principles, soundness of moral character, and honesty. A trust betrayed loses integrity, and trust without integrity is empty. Trust, along with communication, is one of the two most important relationship traits. Move forward with integrity, remaining steadfast in the greatest relationship of all, yourself.
Well, Colleen, I have my tarot cards fanned across my table in front of me, and I, you know, immediately just intuitively pull one, and this was the Tower for you. So when it comes to trust and integrity, you could be, in this case, rethinking a friendship, a relationship with somebody where you feel like you've been misled, or perhaps you learned something about them that you didn't know before. And the Tower, I love the Tower in that your foundation is solid. It's just what's above there starts to change shape. So you might be looking at somebody in a new way, or having a new perception, which, you know, of course, alters you in matters of how much do you trust somebody and with what information do you trust, and just staying, you know, with your own integrity. So she goes, oh, the Tower, that makes sense. Well, I'm glad, because we don't know what makes sense. Here's another thing, unknowable to me unless there's feedback. So that's good that you thanks for that feedback, Colleen, because that's great. But I like the Tower. I know a lot of people see a lot of negative things in it. I do not. I see that there's a good, strong foundation there, and you've got a hold of that. Well, extraneous things, you know, kind of fall to the wayside. So I think we have Dr. Edward up next. Michael?
Yes, and Dr. Edward, I pulled wild card number 3, blocks. You have to let us know if you've gotten that one recently, but I don't think so.
Blocks.
All right. Hmm. There is a time for movement and a time to sit still. What may seem like blocks could be an opportunity to reevaluate while allowing the universe to open new doorways. At times, we simply need to get out of our own way in order for events to unfold as they should. It can feel like free-falling when a leap of faith is required. If blocks continue, it may be a time for a new direction. Do not dismay. Blockages serve purposes. Diligence and insight is required, and remain open.
Well, I think you're looking at, see, honestly, I pulled, as Michael is saying that, I pulled the Death card for you. I love the Death card, don't get me wrong, it's not a negative.
Oh, who doesn't?
It's a rebirthing, and in context of this, is you're having to take a new strategy. So that's what I'm saying. It's like looking at a new strategy, kind of taking a different direction with something. And I'm seeing that it's very specific in my mind, Edward, something very like a challenge in front of you. And it's just saying, you know, if there's a blockage there, sit back, breathe, and let some new ideas come to you, that you can begin again or start from a new vantage point. So that's what I'm saying there. And honestly, my sense too is in the work, in matters of work. That's what I see it as. Mm-hmm. So.
And I really love that take on it, in the sense of, you know, tying it with the blocks you said, you know, a new direction might be needed, changes in thought process, perhaps something needs to change in that. And death doesn't always have to be a negative. It can just be in that, like you said, change. But
it's rebirthing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now we have Wendy up next, and I'm gonna try to make this especially focused. Then I'm randomizing
very much,
and I'm focused, and I'm thinking about Wendy, and I pulled number 25, the power of belief.
I like it.
Belief is the most powerful force in the universe. One's beliefs are responsible for one's successes and failures. It's also important to realize that you cannot disbelieve in one thing without also believing in something else. Beliefs can help or hinder, enable or disable. Denial is a belief and means lying to oneself to evade responsibility. Ponder your beliefs to see if they are healthy or unhealthy. Proceed with conviction.
Well, again, in context, I've pulled the Jack of Clubs for you. Now, I want everybody to consider that there are knights for kings, but there's no princesses for the queens. So I see a Jack as either male or female. So the Jack of Clubs here is a communicator and some changes. And it's asking you at this point to be true to what you believe, and be willing to maybe shift some of those beliefs. But it's to, you know, I have a picture, Wendy, of you delivering some kind of information, and in perhaps even in a teaching capacity, you're educating others and like bringing your ideas to the table. So that's what I'm seeing. It's, but it's about who you are, about what you're thinking and what you believe. Like I always say, I'm careful with beliefs because we don't want to be too firm on them, but don't be afraid to have your beliefs. Honestly, I was telling somebody the other day that she's asking me if I feel uncomfortable when I'm challenged with Christians because somebody was telling her that, well, that reader you have there now is, she's evil. You know, that's evil work. And I just looked at her, rolled my eyes. I said, no, it doesn't bother me. They're Christian. Well, she laughed because it's turning the perspective. Do you see? Be always be willing to turn that perspective and feel confident in who you are. But in a lighter way, if that makes sense. Hope that makes sense to you, Wendy. You're a good communicator, and you're learning to articulate better, and you're gonna do a good job. I see that as a real big positive. So
yeah, very much so. And well, I was just gonna address one thing that I saw in chat. Steven said, "Isn't belief a low form of knowledge?" And I was just gonna throw out there, I don't think belief is knowledge at all. Belief is having faith and belief in something without being able to completely and objectively prove it. And every human being has beliefs because we live in a world full of infinite unknowables. So, you know, at some point we're just going to have to roll the dice and say, based on the best that I have of information right now, I got to say that this is what I think is going on right now. Or, you know, this is what I kind of think is what's going on right now, but a lot of it you just can't know. But it's different. Related, different, but a big part of humanity. So that was my little tirade. That's all I know about that.
In answer to your question, I just read in the chat that you have a big decision to make coming up. I think you already know the answer, Wendy, and it's just being comfortable to do it. Be you. That's my gut. Sherry is up next, Michael. So what have you got for Sherry?
I have number 41, communication.
Oh, good one.
The most important form of communication is with the higher self, reflecting on one's spiritual evolution. A good communicator both listens and speaks equally, interactively, and with interest. A poor communicator either talks too much or listens too much. A lack of communication will kill any relationship. This is the most effective method for ending an unhealthy relationship. Assertive communication is direct, honest, empathetic, and focuses on win-win. communication, along with trust, is one of the two most important relationship traits.
I got, with communication, I got for you, I pulled two cards, Sherry, so I'm going to tell you what they both are. And I would say there's a reason if two come out at once. One is the Five of Clubs. I like that because it's about some, like, the difficulty is over. There's a celebration of kind, like a relief, a success. And the Queen of Diamonds came out with that. Queen of Pentacles in tarot language. So you have the Five of Clubs, the Queen of Pentacles. I feel like you're articulating yourself in a really good way now, like you've overcome a challenge, you got your point across, or you're getting it across. And it has to do also with how you provide for yourself, perhaps in the workplace, your job, or what you hope for in a job, because I feel like there's some kind of change coming up for you, and that just could be a new position, if you want to know. It doesn't mean a big radical, but it's you're communicating yourself, but I feel like some little passages come to pass, and so, you know, take comfort in that. All right, so we have Dr. Angie next, Michael.
All right, and Dr. Angie, I have pulled number two, esteem and validation. The self-esteem is self-worth based on internal expectations and validation, not to be confused with them-esteem, which is self-worth based on external expectations and validation. That is what others think. High self-confidence is not the same as self-esteem. Self-validation is the highest regard you give to yourself. Fully experience the truth of your own path.
Well, in support of that, Angie, I got the Hierophant. I like the Hierophant in that it likes order. It likes to, ordinarily people use the word conformity with it. Sure, but what are you conforming to? Because it's still within your own realm. So how you regard your own order in life, how you perceive your routines and your stability. And that being said, it's like you're finding a new order. You're finding a new way of being. And she just said, I need order to function. And I feel like that's stabilizing for you. There's something like you finally become more comfortable with the way you have things in order. And that's a really good moment to have. So good for you. I really appreciate the feedback. Thanks, everybody in the chat room. So far, it's making sense to people, and I'm glad about that because Michael and I, as you know, we're just over here randomly picking cards, and, you know, there we go. We said, oh, but we're plugged in, and that's what it is. First of all, we're plugged in anyway, but plugged into this platform, these people in the chat, you're in the chat room, so we have this electrical kind of current that connects us all in a good way. Yeah,
absolutely. And it's about that. That's what I love about having this, this live, you know, taping of our broadcast, is that we kind of get a bit of interaction with, you know, people. We have a bit more of a dynamic conversation, and we want it to be interactive and dynamic. We want new ideas. We want to explore ideas. That's what being a metaphysician is all about.
Yeah,
metaphysical humanist, and this, you know, it's been, you know, very important to me too. Building this, being a part of this community, and it's very much a core of what it means to be human. We all want we want to be able to share with each other. We want to be able to explore ideas with each other, and you know, I really have to say, I appreciate being able to have these great discussions with you every week, Dr. Hunter, and I'm glad that we have people that come to the live broadcast so that they can participate in the chat. Mm-hmm. Express those ideas. Let's explore them. Let's talk about them. Let's make this more interactive. And if you have ideas, make sure to send them in. I'm sure that there's an email to do that with, which I'll have for you next week. And, you know, it's just, it's all a part about exploring the world around us. But,
well, it is. And, boy, you know, 45 minutes gone, snap of a finger. You know, we always wonder if we're going to have enough to talk about, but Michael and I don't run out of things to talk about. But that's also with the help of, you know, everyone in the chat room, too. So yeah. Another great program, Michael. Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
I appreciate it. So,
as we wrap up, it's just been a fun discussion, fascinating discussion.
Yeah.
And we've covered a lot of different areas and aspects to the unknowable and dealing with the unknowable, and probably most important of all, learning really what is unknowable, being able to deal with it, being able to accept it, and being able to think critically with that knowledge that there are certain things that are unknowable, and to keep an open mind. As they say, not so open that your brain falls out. But as always, it's been a great, great discussion. Thank you, everybody, for joining us for the live broadcast. Until next week, listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody. Have a great week.